Welcome back to Camden Cast, your unofficial Baltimore Orioles fan podcast from CamdenChat.com. I am your host, Mark Brown, and I am joining you today for only the second breaking news edition in Camden Cast history. The first was when Manny Machado got surprisingly called up in the middle of the 2012 season, and my then podcasting partner in crime, Andrew Gibson, and I just could not wait. We had to record that night, and we've hit that level again today on this this Saturday, January the 16th, 2016, in the afternoon, as the Orioles surprisingly have decided to re-sign Chris Davis. And I'm joined today by my current podcasting partner in crime, Alex Conway. Alex, how is it going?
It's going pretty good, Mark. Getting jazzed up.
I gotta tell you, I did not... Well, I maybe thought the Orioles would bring back Davis, but I did not expect it was going to be the next day after hearing all these rumors about them hot and heavy about Yoenis Cespedes.
Yeah, definitely. I thought at first it might have been sort of a ploy, and it probably was sort of a ploy to leak their contract offer to Cespedes, but I think they were legitimately trying to get him, and then I guess the ploy worked in a sense. In another sense, you could say it didn't work.
Maybe I am foolish, but I was kind of believing all of the different people saying, oh, the Orioles are, you know, losing their patience with Davis. So, I mean, I guess it's possible that that was true. And then they made the offer to Cespedes. And then Davis and Boris realized, okay, finally decided the Orioles are serious about moving on. And then we're like, hey, how about we do this thing after all? Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what happened, but I guess we'll never know.
Nope.
So 7 years, $161 million is the currently out there number. We've seen at least one report from Ken Rosenthal of Fox Sports that there's believed to be some deferred money in the contract, so we don't know exactly when and where that money's been deferred from. But that's what it looks like. So obviously two things. That's the longest contract in Orioles history. The biggest contract in Orioles history. And a third thing, I suppose, is that it doesn't help the starting rotation at all, which was, you know, the biggest problem about the 2015 Orioles. But let's not worry about that right now.
Let's not
do that. Here's a fact. The Orioles just re-signed a guy who hit 47 home runs last year. Is he going to hit 47 home runs again this year? Well, you know, probably not. But, you know, keeping Davis in the short term, I do think, is an important consideration. Because right now, Adam Jones is still here. Manny Machado is still here. You know, Zach Britton is still not super expensive.
Jonathan Scope.
Scope is young and cheap.
They got Weeters for one more year.
Weeters is here for another year. Exactly. So, like, the next 3 years are important because
Yes. That's
when these players are here and they're not outrageously expensive. And, you know, for that matter, to a lesser extent, after 2017... basically three-fifths of your rotation is gone because as things stand right now, because Jimenez, Tillman, and Gonzalez's contracts will all run out then as things currently stand. And as you've probably noticed, Alex, and also our listeners, there's nobody on the farm that's like looking like in stone is going to be okay, the 2018 Orioles starting rotation.
Definitely not.
So... you know, your next 2 years, 3 years really, and two specifically, that's a really important time to field the best Orioles team that they can field. And I, barring a disaster of some kind, and I'm knocking on my desk here, my wooden desk, to ward off the bad luck about that. But, like, seriously, barring a disaster, Chris Davis makes the 2016, 17, and 18 Orioles better, and that really matters a lot.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that's what a lot of people are saying, have said, you know, after 2-3 years, is Chris Davis going to be any good? And, you know, I don't know. You don't know. Maybe historically, 7-year contracts to 30-year-olds end up being look bad at the end, but not all of them have. And Chris Davis is clearly, he's a very good athlete. He keeps himself in very good shape. You know, I don't know. We could all be dead tomorrow. Why not enjoy Chris Davis hitting home runs this year and the next couple of years at very least?
Alex, we were talking a bit before we started recording about kind of some of the the doom and gloom crowd. And admittedly, I'm often in the doom and gloom crowd, as longtime Camden Chat readers certainly know. But like, people are out there like, well, this Chris Davis contract is going to be bad because Joe Mauer and because Ryan Howard and because Josh Hamilton. And yeah, all of those have turned out to be contracts that didn't really work out at all for the team that signed them. But Chris Davis is not any of those guys. You know, he's not he's not like Joe Mauer, for instance. Well, he was a catcher and he had concussion issues. So, you know, that is not an issue for Davis. You know, catching games didn't break down his body. He didn't have concussion problems. Ryan Howard is not in the shape that Chris Davis has ever been in, I would say.
Yeah.
As you pointed out to me, you know, the Phillies, even in his prime, were never going to put Ryan Howard in the outfield, even, you know, even in a pinch. Whereas Davis, you know, he's not the greatest guy when you put him out there in the outfield, but he can do it. He's athletic enough that he can play in the outfield.
He's athletic enough to run, you know, chase the ball down, jump, dive for the ball. You know, he made a bunt in 2012 after Markakis's hand got broke the whatever Hamate hamate bone.
Yeah,
Davis was in there making running catches and leaping catches and diving catches. I mean, he's an athlete. You know, he's more of an athlete than in a more traditional sense of an athlete where he's muscular and can run fast and jump high kind of thing.
Right. He's not just a fat guy who you have to stick at first base because there's nowhere else for you to put him.
Yeah.
So how much of a difference does that make? I don't know. Just as far as their baseball reference listed weights, for instance, Davis is 20 pounds lighter than Howard. That's 230 for Davis versus 250 for Howard as far as their listed weights on baseball reference. So I don't know. I don't know if their playing weights are different at this point in time, but there's a lot of difference in 20 pounds. Like, for instance, I think you could certainly argue that Howard being heavier probably contributed to his ripping of his Achilles before his 5-year $125 million contract, before he had even played one game of that contract. He had torn his Achilles.
Yeah.
Because as I recall, he ended his 2011 season with that torn Achilles.
Yeah, and, out at first, right?
Yeah, and his contract didn't even start until 2012. So again, and again with Davis, okay, the Orioles are signing the contract right now. So they already know Davis's health, and it's not like that's at the beginning. So it's not like that's an uncertain question either. And, Josh Hamilton, also a bad contract, but Josh Hamilton also has had problems with substance abuse and Like real problems.
Also, he signed. Did Josh Hamilton was like 34, 35 or something when he signed that contract, I think. I don't know for
something
sure.
Something more than Davis's 30.
Yeah. Because he was out for years due to substance abuse.
Baseball reference is pretty quick. So let's see. His first year in Los Angeles, he was, Hamilton, that is, was turned 32 in the May of his first contract. So again, that's a 2-year difference.
Yeah.
And a lot can happen in 2 years. And also, while Chris Davis, yes, he got suspended for the Adderall, but that's not on the level of the Josh Hamilton kind of substance problem. That's like real, you know, doing drugs that you get arrested for merely possessing kind of stuff. Like, it's just not.
Yeah.
So it might not work for many reasons, but I don't think any of those guys are good reasons why it won't.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, you know, did the Orioles overpay? Probably. I think that by the very nature of signing a free agent, you're the one that was going to pay the most. So it's most of the time an overpay. And then I guess the other issue is that they were likely negotiating against themselves. But
yeah, that part annoyed me when I thought about it, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, because it's like, okay, so the initial offer that we heard about last month or whenever was 7 years, $154 million.
Yeah.
We have not really heard one credible thing that some other team was out there willing to pay that.
There was a couple, like, interested in stories, stuff like that, but nothing no concrete offer, no concrete numbers. And I mean, at the end of the day, 161 million is 7 million more, so a million more a year.
Right. Who cares? Because it's not our money.
Yeah, which is a lot, obviously, for most people. But, I mean, it's, you know, in the grand scheme of that contract, I bet you Boris just called and said, yeah, you know, Peter, just give me a million more. You know, I need that third yacht.
I mean, really, your 7 million there is like letting Davis and company save face. Because if they had to sign for the initial offer, it would have clearly been, you know, they lost. Obviously, Alex and I have no idea what kind of dynamics were at play there, but that's what it seems. One way you could read it is it lets them, you know, they got their win. And I mean, like, think about it. Like, if the Orioles had decided, you know what, we're not budging over $154 million, and then Chris Davis went wherever the heck else instead for $161 million, you'd be like, Orioles, did you cut off your nose to spite your face here? What is your why get hung up over $7 million?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, a lot of the same people that you can see on the internet today that have been, I don't know, complaining, I guess, during the season, where just every time Davis hit a home run, it'd be like, just say, you know, oh, that's gonna suck when he does it for someone else next year. And, you know, I don't know. It's a lot of money. It's probably too much money. But I'm going to be very happy to see him in a uniform again, in an Orioles uniform again. It just, you know, I like seeing the same players. I like Chris Davis. I don't know. I'm excited about it. That's all.
Alex, here's something I was thinking about. Basically, back in October, we were looking at Orioles beat writers writing articles like, yeah, you know, the most likely free agents to come back are going to be Steve Pierce and Gerardo Parra, and probably Matt Wieters is gone, and probably Chris Davis is gone, and probably Darren O'Day is gone. That was basically what was, like, in the Baltimore Sun free agency year-end wrap. And now here we are, 3 months later. Wieters is back for 1 year. O'Day's back for 4 years. Davis is back for 7 years. Well, okay, so maybe the 7 years is bad. But for as far as the 2016 Orioles are concerned, those are the three guys who are back. And I think we could probably – Parra has obviously already signed elsewhere. And Steve Pierce, I think we can rule out him coming back at this point. So, like
– most likely.
I mean, as far as next year's team compared to how it looked like it was possible 3 months ago, that's a pretty big win right there. Considering at first it looked like the two worst guys of the free agent class were like, oh, yeah, these are the most likely ones to come back, and the other, you know, the other guys will be gone. You know, yeah, certainly if someone thinks about it that way, that's a pretty big win, at least for next year's team. Well, this
definitely.
This year's team, it's 2016 now. I still got to get that in my head.
Yeah. I sent it out over the Twitterverse earlier today. But, you know, I was sure of two things the last 2 years, that Nick Markakis was going to be an Oriole forever, and that Chris Davis, there's no way that Chris Davis, they were going to pony up the money to re-sign Chris Davis, you know, and the opposite happened.
Yeah, we don't know anything. Thank you for listening to our podcast, even though we don't know anything.
Yeah.
No one knows anything.
Remember, Matt Wieters is going to be a Brave. I said that on here multiple times.
I mean, that seemed like a reasonable thing to say at the time, you know? Like, who could have imagined a Scott Boras client would be the first one to ever take the qualifying offer business, you know?
Yeah, we'll see. I'm excited to see what Wieters does fully healthy with a very weak 2016 free agent class. And
I'm hoping the monster walk year of 2015 that I expected from him will actually happen in 2016, and maybe it will. I mean,
it's going to be very important that it does for the Orioles' sake.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but it's the big thing right now with Davis is going to be the deferred money, and when it's deferred to, and how much, and what it's going to look like over the next 3-4 years, his salary every year. And we just don't know that yet.
Right. I'm sure that will trickle out eventually, but it is important, like, especially if you want to entertain the wild fantasy that maybe they'll sign someone else who matters this offseason.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we were doing whatever, crunching the numbers in our head beforehand. You're talking right now, present day, probably somewhere near $135, $140 million payroll, unless Davis's first year is insanely deferred.
Right. The right now estimate from Baseball Reference and Kotz Contracts for the Orioles payroll is $116.8 million. And that's counting everybody's settled in arbitration except for Britton and Mattis, and that's counting an estimate for both Britton and Mattis, as well as filling in minimum salary-ish players that are pre-arbitration. So that gets you to $116.8 million right now. So if we add Davis's average annual value onto that, that's basically $140 million if he's getting $23 million in year one, which he might not be. It could be that the year one has some money that's backloaded to later in the contract. It could be that it's deferred until after the contract is over. So it could be that could be a little less, but not enough less, I think, to go out and sign, as one rumor was just before we started recording this podcast, that they would then go for a shorter contract for Yoenis Cespedes. After all, I mean, that would require kicking up the payroll beyond. Like, I mean, I've basically been thinking 140 would be the number
I was thinking 130.
since about October, based on the Orioles have gone up about $10 million a year every year Duquette has been here, and they ended 2015 at $125 million. So okay, $140 million would go up $15 million, but it seemed doable. And obviously it is going to be doable. But if you're saying, okay, well, even if we defer $5 million and then we pay Cespedes $20 million, now you're talking like what $155 million. That's a lot more of a jump.
Yeah, that's a very big jump for the Orioles, which is, I mean, probably why all the rumor from Encina was nothing more than 2 years on Cespedes, which, yeah, good luck. I mean,
Like, I mean,
I
I don't know. Like, who knows what it's going to come down to with him? Like, if he doesn't get his long deal. And by the way, Rock Cubatco said that Cespedes was out there looking for more money than Davis got,
Yeah.
which did not at all match up with just yesterday, Friday, that is, hearing from ESPN's Jerry Krasnick, who said that Cespedes had been seeking a 6-year deal for $22 million per year. If you do
Yeah.
that multiplication, that's $132 million, which is definitely less than $161 million. So I guess either Krasnick or Rock Cubatco is very wrong in the information they passed along.
Wouldn't surprise me, or it wouldn't surprise me if the first time the Orioles talked to Cespedes and his agent, they said, or they said we want 8,200, just like Boris said about Chris Davis. I mean, that's how negotiations go.
Right, you start higher than you think you're going to get so that when you come back down, you get what you actually wanted.
Yeah, that's how it all goes. It would be pretty crazy to me if they signed either any big free agent that's left. I mean,
I mean, really,
yeah.
even if they signed Giovanni Gallardo, which I don't want them to do, that would
That
still
would
be
be surprising.
crazier than I can comprehend.
Yeah. Because Gallardo is still going to get, what, I don't know, 12, 13, $10 million a year. I don't know. Probably the same, kind of the same deal as Jimenez got.
I think people
And
are thinking Gallardo is going to get like 336, unless I'm completely
336.
wrong. Let's see if I can
I don't know. I don't really want, Gallardo at
No,
all,
I don't
especially
want to give
considering
up
the
the
draft
draft
pick
pick.
compensation.
Don't want to give up the draft pick. Not that the number 14 draft pick, especially when it's the Orioles using the pick, has any kind of guarantee to be, a future star or even a future useful player. But it's the message it would send that they don't care about that draft pick at all to sign a guy who's, to me, it seems like in a good case will be about what Ubaldo Jimenez is,
Yeah.
based on the fact that his
Different,
strikeout
obviously.
rate keeps declining, Gallardo's, that is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Gallardo, it just, he'll probably get there in a different way as Jimenez, but it'll probably be the same result, which is not good enough for the Orioles. What they need. I mean, there's really no pitcher out there who's going to give them what they need.
Yeah, at this point, no.
And they need about four of them, probably.
No,
They
no
have
one
to.
who's left. I mean, I guess Kazmir maybe would have been a good answer, but no, that one
Yeah.
wasn't happening.
No. I mean, with the. I mean, he got an opt out after the first year, right? So, I mean,
He did.
yeah. And the Orioles have said, Dan Duquette has said many times that they will not consider opt-outs.
Yeah, that's a whole different kettle of fish. We don't even need to get into today, but it's a weird one.
Yeah, Kazmir would have made some sense. I don't know. I mean, I guess right now they're really looking. They've been linked to interested in Doug Fister, but Rock has said on Twitter and in his blog that at the 222 price that I think Jerry Krasnick quoted, they're not interested.
I could maybe get behind a 1 year for Fister because he was so bad last year, so I don't want him for more than 1 year until he can prove that he can be good again.
Yeah.
He was just
even
so
if
bad.
They sign, even if they sign Fister, the most important thing for their starting rotation is going to be Gausman being better and then Tillman and Gonzalez being able to recreate whatever they did in 2014.
Which is also true if they sign Gallardo. Like,
yeah,
their season is still really going to hinge a lot on
unless Gausman they get very
taking a step forward, Tillman not being bad again, and Gonzalez not being bad again. Like, either way, that's 3/5 of your rotation. And really, you're counting on Jimenez to be at least average-ish. And now that's 4/5 of your rotation. That's really the key aspect of the team, whatever they do with
I think
Gallardo or Fister or whoever. Like, I mean, really, if they sign a guy, what does that do? That bumps Vance Worley out of the picture, or Mike Wright or Tyler Wilson.
Or Brian Mattis, right?
Oh, don't even. Let's not even. I don't even think that was serious.
Like, I'm just trying to get you worked up.
Yeah. So, like, and I mean, to some extent, someone could say, well, why did they sign Davis when that's their area they need to improve? Because even signing Davis, it's like, well, yeah, but we still need the starting rotation to not be terrible. Yeah, but you know what? Davis hits a lot of dingers, man. Come on.
Yeah. Come on. I mean, I think what you're sort of looking at, and it seems as if they're basically trying to recreate what they did in 2014. So that was I think they were a top 10 offense, like a top 5 bullpen, a top 10 defense, and then just they had 5 starting pitchers that all had ERA pluses above 100, and just like 6 good innings handed over to the bullpen. The bullpen, I think, is going to be very, very good. And, you know, hopefully you hit a lot of home runs, which I think they'll probably be able to do again.
Like, a team can be a successful team even with a dismal starting rotation if everything else is working.
Yeah.
I mean, really, kind of the Orioles 2012 team proved that. And to a larger extent, as much as it pains me to append this phrase to them, the recent World Series winning Royals.
Yeah.
Also, like, people maybe don't realize it, and I was in fact surprised when I looked it up for myself, but like, the Orioles' rotation was bad, and the next worst, like, the next best one after the Orioles, and in the still bad territory, was the Royals, as far as their ERA. So you had the Orioles I'm sorry, that must have shifted a little bit towards the end of the season. I know that was true at one point. But the Orioles' starting rotation ERA is 4.53, which is bad. The Royals' rotation was a 4.34 for the whole season. That's also bad. Like, that's bad.
Yeah.
You have a bad starting rotation. And it didn't matter. They won a gajillion games and then just roiled their way through the playoffs. So if everything else is firing, you can get away with it. Maybe that's what the Orioles are hoping for, and there's some precedent that you know, they could get away with it if other areas improve, like if the back end of the bullpen it stays as good, which I think not an unreasonable possibility. You've got Britton coming back, O'Day coming back, you've got the potential for Brock and or Givens to step forward and solidify, you know, a spot. In a, you know, a real trio of, you know, that everyone bandies about is, oh man, that back end of the bullpen, you don't want to mess around with them. Like, well, basically, both the Yankees and Red Sox now are in this category. The Yankees especially, with your Chapman, Miller, Betances thing.
Yeah, that's the end of Yankee games are going to be frustrating. if the Yankees are winning.
So, like, if the Orioles improve, say, a catcher with a healthy Matt Wieters, which is possible, if they improve in the outfield with Hyun-Soo Kim compared to the crap that was their left field last year, and if they just kind of make it work in right field, it's possible. Although, right now, I think your right field competition is going to be between Nolan Reimold and LJ Hoes or something like that. Maybe,
yeah, not
maybe
the ideal
throw
matchups.
Mark Trumbo out there sometimes.
Davis.
Davis could be out there sometimes.
Dariel Alvarez.
Dariel Alvarez could maybe be in that picture. Yeah, that's not great. But if that's your worst spot on the team, and that's just your one really bad spot,
yeah,
you can make it work.
You can make it work.
As long as we're ignoring the fact that J.J. Hardy has a torn labrum in his non-throwing shoulder that he's not going to get surgery on.
So he probably
will continue to struggle there. So that's probably one black hole that's staying constant. But, yeah, you know, Jonathan Scope could be better at the plate, like you said. It could work. It could work. I'm trying to talk myself into thinking it could work. But
I mean, certainly it could. It could not. You know, it's... I'm not 100% on it either way. I don't know what's going to happen.
The Orioles, some things will be worse than last year, and they need some things to be better in turn. And, I mean, all of that we just said was assuming the starting rotation is still bad, which it might not be. Gausman improves, if Tillman gets back to where he was, if Gonzalez gets back to where he was. Maybe Gonzalez was hurt, maybe now he's better. I don't know what Tillman's problem was. I don't know if that'll be better. We were analyzing the poor quality photos from the recent Orioles minicamp from this past week at Sarasota to see if Chris Tillman still looked fat like he did at last year's minicamp. I don't know if all of you out there had seen the photo, but it was from last January.
I remember it.
And he was just standing on side profile, and you could just see this huge gut that, like, you could never see with him before. I don't know if that's why he was what he was in 2015, but I don't know that it helped, and it was not an inspiring picture to look at. And we didn't conclusively decide whether this year's incarnation of the pictures still looked like there was a huge gut or not. There weren't as many good side profile shots to really, really make that determination. So I don't know that we can make any forecast based on Chris Davis's gut or lack thereof. Chris Davis, Chris Tillman is what I meant to say right there. Who knows, man? I don't know.
I don't know much.
It could be interesting. I, in spite of myself, I find myself getting excited for next year with this Davis signing, just because, like, I mean, they needed Davis for this upcoming year. They needed him.
And I mean, you know, it's obviously in the internet baseball complex, it's not necessarily agreed upon how important team chemistry or anything is, and it's usually derided as a reason for bringing someone in or bringing someone back. But I mean, you'd see the quotes immediately. What Zach Britton said, in all honesty, we really needed him back. And, you know, I think it sends a message to the people on your team. I mean, you could go back and read all the quotes from just about everybody about what it meant to them that Nick Markakis did not come back.
Right. And we're not going to deal with that whole stream of spring training quotes again, because you'll have – I mean, really, they're all going to be happy because Chris Davis is coming back, you know? Adam Jones will be happy. We already know Britton's happy. What was it? Wieters was quoted saying he texted Davis saying, please tell me it's true. Don't mess with my emotions or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it sends your message to, like, Manny Machado that, okay, you know, if you're here and if you're good for several years, the Orioles are going to pay you.
Mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, I don't know. I don't know what it's going to be, but it definitely means a lot in sort of the soft powers context. I think it means a lot to the Orioles. It means a lot to many fans. I think that they ponied up the money to bring him back.
Like, regardless of what happened in 2015, you have a guy who was a core part of their rise out of the depths of horrible is still here. You know, you're keeping some continuity there.
Yeah.
The all-time Utah Street home run champion now has 7 more years to hit home runs onto Utah Street.
He's going to pad that lead.
7 more years where he's playing 81 games a year at Camden Yards anyway, I suppose. You know, he would have still maybe played a few games here, but whatever. You know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
He could pad the lead, exactly, like you said. Is that worth $161 million? No. But it's worth a little of that $161 million, just like the clubhouse chemistry thing is worth a little of that $161 million.
Sure.
Just like having, you know, the fans continuing to have this I like our guys group that they can come out and see is worth a little bit of that $161 million. Having Davis the next 3 years is worth paying some of that years 4 through 7 money. Because, like it or not, you're not getting one of the top free agents for 3 years.
No.
That's not how it works. If you want 3 years, you got to absorb some risk in the back end. Like, there's no chance ever that Chris Davis was going to sign for 3 years with anybody. So, if you want a Chris Davis, you got to, if you're going to play in that world, you got to deal with some possible back end waste. That's just the way it is. And if you're not willing to take that chance, you're never going to get one of those players. And you're never going to have a team that can be improved so much by getting one of those players. That's an important consideration, too, that I feel like is not so in vogue, so to speak, with the baseball internet complex.
Yeah.
Because, like it or not, you know, all the steamers and whoever else can project, well, this is what he's going to be worth. Well, guess what? That's not what he's signing for. That's not what any of these guys are signing for.
Pretty much. You know, like I was saying before, not only by the very nature of winning a free agent, you are probably going to pay more than what a lot of people think is appropriate because you paid the most. And it's just, you know, the nature of baseball is that with pre-arb minimum contracts and arbitration years holding down salaries, the money is disproportionately attributed to free agent signings. I mean, really, if you want to break it down by, you know, what people are paying on the open market for millions of dollars per war, Chris Davis probably needs to be worth about 3 wins every year over the life of his contract, which means he's an above average player. To sort of be just worth his contract, because they're going for about a win on the free agent market's about $7 million these days, and that's only going up. So, I, you know.
3 WAR is not a lot for a player with the potential of Chris Davis, you know. Like, yeah. So for Fangraphs WAR this past year, Davis was worth 5.6 WAR. And that, according to them, was worth $45 million.
Yeah.
So, like, even if he's not that good, even if he's only worth, like, 4 WAR, that's still, you're getting more value from Davis than you're paying him.
Uh-huh.
So, basically, all what you need is, you need to kind of bank, maybe if you bank, you know, $15 million a year in surplus value in the first 3 years, that offsets your 2 years at the back end where he's not earning his keep as much.
Yeah, you eat that money on the back end. It's just that... That's the nature of things. And maybe you won't. I mean, I was looking at today, the Mark Teixeira signed with the Yankees, which two words I don't like saying, but, you know, for $8,180, I think. And his contract, I mean, he's had a couple of bad years in the last 3, but last year he was really good. And most of the years before that, he was pretty good. It really is not going to be that bad of a contract when all is said and done. So, you know, it's not everyone that goes bad after 30 and not all first basemen and, you know, I don't know.
That's a very good point. Because the fear, I think, for Davis is not that it would be a gradual decline and then that he would no longer really be worth it at the end. But I think the fear is if it was a sudden precipitous decline and then, you know, and then, like, if it was a sudden precipitous decline after year 3 or even year 2, and then suddenly you've got 4 or 5 years where he's just stinks. Yeah, I mean, if that happens, yeah, that's a disaster scenario for the contract. It's true. But like you said with Teixeira, the 8-180, whatever, I mean, that was an outlandish contract. But also, the Yankees have gotten their money's worth.
Yeah. The first couple of years he was very good. This last year he was very
Like
good.
really, like
In
the Yankees
between.
got their money's worth in friggin' year one of that contract, where he had a 948 OPS and was the MVP runner-up, and also the Yankees won the World Series that year.
Yeah, all that.
So, you know, like really, as crazy as it is to say that the contract was good for the Yankees, although they've had a couple bad years of it also. But he earned enough in the good years, earned it enough that it was even worth it for the years where he was not so good. That's your best case scenario for Davis. And could it happen? Yeah, sure. What the heck? I don't know that it won't happen.
Pretty much. I mean, you can use projection systems and try to guess, but and maybe that's what you should be doing if you're running a team. I don't know. But, you know, Davis is a relatively unique first baseman. So.
Alex, you just mentioned using projection systems and whatnot. So I guess another question in the Davis thing that we're not going to know the answer is to what extent it was the baseball people that had this input on where they should draw the line, and to what extent it was a direct Boris to Angelos line.
Yeah, my guess is it was more of a Boris to Angelos line.
I think that's probably true. And so, like, I
I
mean, you
think,
could wonder
yeah.
what was your. Where would your baseball people have drawn the line? How much surplus was there? Because that's your real waste. Like, you know, you're not saying, well, $161 million is going to be a quote-unquote waste.
Yeah, that's you're 100% right. I think, you know, Boris, when he's got his big money guys, he says, "Get out of the way, GM. Let me talk to the guy who knows what's going on, who's got the checkbook." I mean, the Max Scherzer contract, it was pretty much reported, was directly negotiated with the Learners for the Nationals.
I believe
That,
that was the case with like Prince Fielder when he signed
yeah,
with the Tigers also.
contracts like that, and you can say, you know, whatever you want about the level of meddlesomeness you're comfortable with your owner, but contracts like that aren't signed by the second in command. know, they're Peter Angelos writing the check, he can negotiate that contract. So that's the way it is, I would think, with basically every team.
And I mean, Peter Angelos has. This is something that I'm basically saying from my dad, who I've had several conversations with about him. He always points out that Chris Davis' contract, compared to the kinds of things Peter Angelos has negotiated in his lifetime, is actually small potatoes. Because you're talking about the guy who has done all these asbestos settlements, and he basically negotiated the state of Maryland's multi-billion-dollar, you know, lawsuit against the whole tobacco industry, like. $161 million for Peter Angelos is actually small potatoes.
Pretty much.
Now it's not none of that stuff transfers to baseball either, but as far as, you know, he's not going to blink at the number of the dollar amounts being thrown around either. So, I don't know how much that affects, but that's something my dad has mentioned a few times, and you know what? Maybe there's something to it.
Yeah. I don't know. I
So I guess another
was just
question to
all gobbled
Alex
up today.
Another question to think about is how much less would the Chris Davis contract have to be to stop the likes of Fangraph's Dave Cameron from writing, and I quote, "The Davis deal could be Scott Boras's most impressive victory over reason yet."
I don't, probably like 5-100 or
Right.
something. I mean,
It's not like if
yeah.
it was 20 million less, I mean, these guys would still be lining up to take a dump on this contract.
Breaking news on this breaking news podcast. Buster Olney just sent out the structure.
Okay. Well, we'll
So
read it
it's.
off, discovering for ourselves. You all will probably already know this since you're going to listen to this some point later, but
Yeah. So 17 million annual 2016 to 2022, annual payments of 3.5 million from 2022 to 2031, then 1.4 million 2032 to 2036, no interest on deferrals.
did I get that right? Every year, 6 million is deferred?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
So it's 17 million a year for, I think, the entire life of the
That sounds
contract.
yeah, 2016 to 2022 is so for the length of the contract, that's only 102. Did I do that math right? Is that $102 million?
Yeah, it's $102 million.
Wow.
That's interesting.
That is That is mighty interesting.
I mean, I guess they'll be paying him until 2036.
2036, you might be talking your Bobby Bonilla business, but I think the Orioles are going to get more value from Davis's contract than the Mets ever got from that whole Bobby Bonilla thing.
Yeah.
That, see, that's really interesting, too, because that's a long, long spread out on that deferred money,
yeah,
which is good because you're not talking about a significant hampering of the Orioles of 2027's payroll to be paying Chris Davis $3.5 million that year if you're looking way into the future there.
And I just did – basically the last 4 years makes up for the – $7 million extra. The last 4 years of deferrals
so Alex,
makes up for it.
We're talking right now money. What does he have to do to earn $17 million? That's like two
I mean,
WAR,
seven,
right?
Yeah, I mean, that's just being an average player, basically.
Two WAR this year. I mean, even in 2022, it'll be even less, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll. Yeah. Yeah. Ken Rosenthal just tweeted this out, but Davis will be 51 when he receives last payment.
Parents? Raise your kids left-handed, and
oh,
hopefully
man.
They can either throw 90 or hit dingers.
But yeah, $17 million. I mean, $17 million is what Adam Jones is making, basically. A little bit more than that, but that's not outlandish.
Like,
I don't think the $3.5 million deferral payments are really going to hurt them in 2023.
Right. Oh no, the 2023 Orioles can't sign the next Everett Cabrera. They'll
so
have
means...
to non-tender the 2024 version of Brian Mattis. Oh, no. That's horrible. No, that's me being sarcastic.
So that was $59 million deferred.
That's a lot.
That's a ton. I don't know. We'll see how the Internet Baseball Complex...
Right, so obviously those hot takes are going to be fired off before you all listen to this podcast. But just
sure.
Sitting here right now, that sounds like a big win for the Orioles to me.
I mean, I would agree. That's a lot. I mean, that's the contract is two-thirds deferred, or a little less than that, I guess.
Because again, if you had assumed when you heard the money, okay, $23 million a year for the length. Now it's six million less a year. You can do a lot with $6 million, although you probably cannot then sign Yoenis Cespedes to next year. But you can do a lot with $6 million.
Yeah, you can do a ton. I mean, yeah, it's.
Like $6 million off of next year's contract, deferred into the future. Your next year, that $6 million, probably that's paying for Manny Machado's raise.
Yeah.
Just for an example, Machado, I could see going up to like $11-12 million.
Hopefully, I mean, hopefully for us, because that means he had a great year.
So the Davis deferral allows them to absorb that and not have that affect anything else they're trying to do.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
It's a huge deal. I mean, really, from a fan's perspective, 7-102 for Davis is a pretty good deal. I mean, I mean, probably at that point, John Angelos is going to be the one worrying about the deferral.
Yeah,
payments.
You're right about that. That's,
I don't want to talk ill about Uncle Peter, but.
Yeah, because I mean, Peter Angelos is already, 86, and now he's deferred payments out to. 2037, so yeah, Peter Angelos would be 102 years old on that. No, he would be 108 years old for that final payment. 107.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a future Angelos problem, just as it's a future Orioles fan problem.
Yeah, And it's not even a future Orioles fans problem. I don't think the $3.5 million deferral payment in 2032 is gonna really hurt that many Orioles fans.
Oh, it's actually 119. I'm sorry, I was multiplying by six instead of seven, but that doesn't change it that much. Seven.
Oh wait.
719.
I was doing the same thing.
We got swept up in the moment. Our basic math skills fled us. So everyone,
we can edit
everyone
that
else
out,
has
right?
been sitting out there for the last 5 minutes thinking we're the biggest idiots in the world, but that's okay.
7-119 is it's really not that bad.
That's a much more Orioles friendly deal. Whether it's gonna end up being a good deal still depends on how Davis performs, but
I mean, obviously. I mean
still...
like all this is gonna come down to performance, but $17 million a year for Chris Davis. I mean, I saw somebody earlier today, I think it was Matt Kremenzer, say like I'll be if an insane amount of money is deferred on this contract, it makes me think, differently about it. And he was talking like $25 to $50 million deferral, and that's on the high end of that. I mean, $42 million deferred. That's changes everything.
Right. Like,
I don't know.
Because seriously, I can't stress enough. What do we care that now the Orioles have to pay Chris Davis $3.5 million in 2030?
Yeah,
no,
I
no care.
could not care
0%.
I just made the point we could all be dead tomorrow. So clearly, there's a greater chance we could all be dead in 2032.
0% caring about that. That's a big deal. What they're going to do with all that deferred money space that's created for them, I got no idea. But that definitely makes a difference in how this whole thing looks.
Yeah. So it's kind of like the first half hour we just talked. You could just erase that.
The
point
still
stands.
Applies. Davis needs to not suddenly be bad.
Yes, that is true.
The Orioles need Davis for the next 3 years, especially.
Yeah. I think that in there, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I don't know. I mean, Peter Angelos is, what, he's 86 now, right? Maybe the next 3 years are as important to him as they are to the rest of this roster. But if he goes out and signs someone big.
Think about it. Not even Buck Showalter and Dan Duquette are contracted to be around beyond the 2018 Orioles.
That's true. Yep.
Right now, Chris Davis is the only one who will be contracted to be on the 2019 Orioles.
Him and Darren O'Day. Though.
That's right. I forgot about it. See, I'm making all these mistakes here. I haven't absorbed that in my head. And obviously, Richie Mansells will still be the trainer until the game dies. But,
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I guess with that 6 million, so 17 plus, what was the number? 117 before, basically?
7 years at $17 million a year makes for a payment of $119 million over.
Yes, sorry, the payroll
contract.
The payroll this year is currently at 116.8. You were saying?
Oh yeah. Okay. So let's see.
So then, the plus Davis is $17 million, $134 million.
134. Yeah, which is $10 million more than what they ended last year.
Yeah, which I guess, like as we've been saying, it's pretty much what they do every year, or under Dan Duquette.
It is what they've done every year under Dan Duquette. So, after all that, we're basically right where we started.
Yeah. Huh. I guess, even a lot of the reaction today being the way it was, there's still plenty of time left before spring training for something to happen. I don't know what.
There's a lot of guys out there. I mean, or it wasn't the most recent thing, but we were talking about on Cam to Chat some, what if Justin Upton has to go around looking for a one-year deal because he's struck out, that Orioles could try and squeeze that in for 1 year, could try and squeeze Cespedes in for 1 year. A lot that could still happen. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I don't know that there has ever really been a free agent market that has played out this long with this many big names lasting this long.
Yeah, it's been crazy. And pretty much all the money has been spent on pitching so far as well. Whereas like all the big hitters were left. And I mean, Davis is like the first big hitter that signed.
That's very true. Unless you count Alex Gordon as a big hitter.
Yeah. Kansas City got a good deal on him. They deferred a bunch of his money too.
I don't know that the Orioles got a hometown discount, but they got a hometown deferral discount, which maybe is worth something too. Pays to be creative.
Yeah.
Hopefully it pays to be creative. I don't know.
I just saw also on Twitter, this has got to be riveting stuff, me reading off of Twitter. The net present value of his contract is about $128 million, which still 7128 is not absurd. I don't know. The deferral stuff's very interesting. It's surprising me even more than the news did this morning.
So if the present valuation is 7128, that's about $18 million average annual value at the present value.
Yeah. Which is probably a pretty reasonable price for Chris Davis, all in all. I wonder if Dave Cameron will take back his Post, probably not.
I would say probably not. I would say probably not. So
Probably not.
we can move on from that before we say anything we regret later.
Say some stuff off air.
But honestly, now you got Chris Davis for a
Yeah.
really for 17 million this upcoming season. Well, that's a good deal. 17 million for next year should look like a good deal. Year after that, hopefully still. Yeah, I mean, geez. It's a lot easier to talk myself into this whole thing than it was an hour ago even.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm having dangerously unlike myself positive thoughts, honestly. I might have to just stop this podcast right now just before I start sounding like I've been taken over by a pod person. I mean, I don't
That's
know.
really interesting. Because I was just remembering, because before Rock had reported, right, that the contract offer was, it was that 7154 number, but the real contract value was like around 150 or a little bit below, considering the deferred money.
Yep.
So if that report is, if I'm understanding it correctly, and if it's correct, it would mean that in a sense they did negotiate him down.
More money
Right.
later to get less money now.
Yeah.
That's true. That's a very good point.
If you're talking net present values, then,
I
you know,
wonder
they
if
could
that
have.
also goes into the Cespedes thing where Cespedes wanted more. Well, maybe that's counting present day value.
Yeah,
Because
maybe that's true.
128 million is in fact less than 132 million.
That's math that we can do on the fly.
That is math we could do on the fly. We don't know the facts behind the math, but we can do the math when we conjure it up.
Yeah, and I don't, I'm, my mind's jumping all around, but I was just thinking about Upton and Cespedes on, you know, you can go find the articles written about it, but the free agent class next year is very weak, which is one of the reasons why people thought that a good amount of, I think, with three people took the qualifying offer this year. And so I think those guys, if they're not finding a long-term deal, especially someone like Upton who's still pretty young, a
Right. I
one-year
don't know
deal
if it
could make
makes
some
as
sense
much
for
sense
them.
for Cespedes, but I do think for Upton it could make more
It makes a
sense.
little sense, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously, just probably just getting my own hopes up, but that'd be cool.
It doesn't sound as crazy as it did when I went to sleep last night, thinking it would maybe be Cespedes, but even then I couldn't really believe that that would happen.
Yeah, I thought I mean, Cespedes at 590 would be pretty, would be a pretty cool contract. Would be, I'd be all right with that. But that just does not seem like what he's probably going to end up signing for. Like you were saying before, I think the Angels are probably going to come in at some point. They need a, what are they? They need a left or a right fielder pretty bad.
Yeah, like I mean, I kind of thought that would be who he would go to back in like October, just because it seemed like, yeah, you know, that seems like the best match right there. Maybe the
Yeah.
Angels aren't realizing, oh, they need to do this, but that's what it looked like to me.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, even Dexter Fowler at this point, although I guess he's got the qualifying offer attached to him, as does Upton. I don't know. I don't know, Mark.
Some national baseball columnists have written more certain columns with less flimsy information than what we just speculated on about why Yoenis Cespedes should go to the Angels.
Yeah,
You get the
pretty
guys who
much.
are out there writing about what a rival executive thinks a team should do. Who cares, man? I'm not going to name the name of who I'm thinking of, but some of you maybe know who I'm thinking of. That guy
I
annoys
mean,
me.
still, you gotta, they gotta put the post up every day, right?
I know that struggle. I do. I don't know anyone who tells me anything, but if I did, I would probably run with all kinds of flimsy information. That'd be fun, man. That'd be a fun life.
Yeah,
Also terrible a lot of the time, but really fun sometimes too.
they're very, very rarely called out on it.
None of the big guys when they're wrong, yeah. Nobody
Yeah.
cares. It's like, oh,
And the
okay.
only one that's been called out recently that I can is like a little snickering at Bob Nightingale because he's gotten some things very
Yeah,
wrong.
he really doofed up back in the winter meetings, so that's getting into columnist arcana. I'm sure most people don't care about that. I find it interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know that the Camden Cast listeners care about it. So,
probably, hopefully not.
I think we've. Yeah, really, it's worse for us that we care than it would be for.
Yeah.
For any of you who don't care, so don't feel like you're the weird ones that you have no idea what we're talking about. No, I assure you, Alex and I are the weird ones here, and we are well aware of it. We are quite aware of it. But I think we're getting about to the end of our roughly Chris Davis hour. I might even title this the Chris Davis hour.
I don't know if I've said anything smart so far, but I don't think I have much smart left in me to say.
I don't know if I ever say anything smart, Alex, but that doesn't stop me from blogging, and it doesn't stop me from podcasting.
No. Someone's got to do it.
Someone has to do it. Is exactly right. Because here's this thing I sincerely believe to be true. If you sit around worrying about whether you're going to say something smart, you will never, ever say anything interesting. Ever.
I like that. That might make some sense.
Like, I don't want to go out and be a total hot taker, but I do feel that you need to have an opinion and not be afraid to be wrong if you ever want to say anything interesting at all. Sometimes I'm wrong. Often
so
I'm
give me,
wrong, but I do the best.
Give me your, you know, 5-minute take on Rule 5 pick Joey Ricard.
Oh, boy. Actually, like, in all seriousness, I think that was a very Dan Duquette pick. And, you know, if he turns into, like, the Ryan Flaherty of the outfield, I think that's a fine outcome.
Yeah, I agree. We'll see. I guess we just got back into this, but it'll be interesting to see if they actually try to keep a Rule 5 pick with Bundy on the roster, because he's essentially a Rule 5 pick.
I think they could get away with it better since they do kind of need a fourth outfielder.
That's true.
And they drafted a guy who can fit in that exact role of fourth outfielder. He can back up center field. He can back up either right field or left field. You know, he can be your put him in the eighth inning guy on a day when Mark Trumbo is your left fielder, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, he doesn't have to really hit all that great to be that. Like, maybe he starts one game a week. Maybe he doesn't even start that. You know, maybe he goes into two games a week in the eighth inning.
That's probably more likely of, you know, yeah, I don't know. We're breaking down Joey Ricard now. But it should, yeah, you're very right. That's a very, like, he's a Dan Duquette Rule 5 pick where he is ready to be your 25th guy right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, without
like
getting
Ryan
too much on to Joey Ricard, his last season, the 2015 season, his combined slash line across double A, well, a little bit of high A, in fact, and then double A and triple A, over 117 games. He batted .321, pretty good. On base percentage of .427, pretty good. Slugging percentage, .447. Okay. Compared to his batting average, that's not very high. So
it's
that,
not
very that's
high,
that's
but
why
it's
that's why he's a Rule 5 pick. That's why he wasn't already on the Rays roster. Because
yep.
They don't know if his lack of power means that he will be totally exposed in the big leagues. But the Orioles don't care if he's totally exposed. If they only need him to start one game a week, and maybe, you know, two or three games, he goes into the eighth inning to replace Mark Trumbo.
Yeah.
That's all he needs to do.
You know, Mark, when I asked you that question about your take on Joey Ricard, I did not expect us to talk about it for 5 minutes.
I didn't either. I didn't expect it either. It ended up happening. Let's get back to Chris Davis. In fact, we're really ready to wind down here. So, Alex, do you have any final thoughts on Christopher? What's his middle name? Lynn. Christopher Lynn Davis here on January the 16th, 2016.
Final thought is, I hope when he cashes that last check, when he's 51 years old, that he goes out and buys himself something nice at Target.
Yeah, Target. if you don't know, Alex has made a very good joke right there. Because Buck Showalter just a couple days ago basically said that he asked Chris Davis, how much do you really need? You can already walk into Target and buy whatever you want. How great is it that that's Buck Showalter's frame of reference, really? Do you have enough money to buy whatever you want in Target? What a down-to-earth guy. I love Buck, man. He's the best.
Yeah, yeah.
He is just absolutely the best. Alex, I also have a final thought on Chris Davis, and it's probably the craziest thing I've said on this podcast, probably in the history of the podcast. So understand I'm not completely serious about it, but I'm throwing it out there, and I'm just saying. So on the subject of players who are 30 and they're sluggers, and you're worried about whether or not they will decline. I'm just going to point out that in the year 1966, the Orioles traded for 30-year-old Frank Robinson, who was an Oriole for 6 years. And in those 6 years for the Orioles, in which time Frank Robinson was 30 to 35, he batted a combined. See, that's what your dog thinks about this. No. But he batted a combined 300, 401, 543. That's a 944 OPS, which at the time was a 169 OPS plus. Now, obviously, Chris Davis is not Frank Robinson.
No.
Chris Davis is not a future Hall of Famer as things stand right now. He didn't have the career of Frank Robinson before he became an Oriole, before he signed this contract, whatever. But, you know, if you're an athlete and you're good at baseball, maybe you're not going to decline so much as you get older. So, you know, is Chris Davis going to be Frank Robinson? Obviously, no. But if he gracefully declines rather than steadily declines, which is basically what happened with Robinson over his time with the Orioles, he's still going to be a pretty good player by the end of that contract. At least a decent player. At least not a total regret of the money that is being paid in 2022 or any of the years beyond through 2037. Wow. I don't even want to think about how old I'll be in 2037. That's bad. That's bad. Depending on what day of the year that last payment is made, I will be 53 years old when Chris Davis gets his last bit of money from the Orioles. But on the other hand, being 53 would beat the alternative of being dead. So.
Yes. Always good to remember that. Being dead is bad.
So there's that's our Chris Davis meandering ramble. And you know what? I hope it works out. I think it could.
I think it could. Yeah, I agree. With the structure now out in the middle of this podcast, I'm a little more optimistic about it.
I think even if it's not great for 7 years, I think on balance, it could be a good deal for the Orioles, especially if he hits another 45 home runs in the 2016 season and the Orioles are in the playoffs again. But
yes,
a lot of non-Chris Davis players will be impacting that also. And, well, you know, Chris Davis, he earned his millions, man. You hit a lot of dingers, you're going to get some money.
Going to get paid.
It's going to be good for him. Good to be Chris Davis. He could buy his own target, really. Just be like the owner operator of a Target store. I don't know if they have that system with Target anyway, but whatever.
It doesn't matter.
Good luck. Good luck, Chris Davis. You can get whatever you want in Target. That is for sure.
Yes.
I hope he lives near a Target that he can even go in one. I don't know. Buck obviously does. Who knows if Chris does? But that's enough. No, we're getting off target. Speaking of targets, we've dumped our final thoughts.
Yes.
So yeah, that's our Chris Davis podcast. We hope it works out. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens. We will probably come back before the off season is over, especially if the Orioles do something else. But we do need to do a proper, you know, season preview, spring training preview, and all that. We'll be back at some point, Camden Cass. Maybe we'll abandon you for a little while at a time, but never forever.
Never.
I can make that promise to the best of my ability. So, for today, Chris Davis, man. How about it? Didn't see it coming. I didn't see it coming.
Nope, not at all.
Didn't see the signing coming. Didn't see the deferral coming.
I didn't see the first offer coming. That was back at the winter meetings.
Life is plenty capable of surprising you. Whoever you are, I hope you were surprised. It's good when life surprises you most of the time. Keeps things from being boring. And for real, that's my final thought. We don't want it to be boring. So, for Alex Conway, I am Mark Brown. We are bringing you Camden Cast. This is Birdland, and we are out.